This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, November 14th, 2007.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's begin. I want to ask first the question, is there are two delegates from the employee assembly, I believe it is, the two delegate seats that are vacant? Is that right? Just to make sure, because I think there's listed as two vacancies there.
Should be two.
Okay, fine. Then we have a quorum. 10 out of 19. Please, I'm sure you all have, but I think I checked it over, but please be sure to sign in if you haven't. Now, I want to first introduce the guests that we have here, and then we'll proceed right to the agenda. From the Codes and Judicial Committee, we have David Kaye there, Andy Cowan right here, Jamie Rogers next to Andy, Rachel Dorfman-Tanlick, is that it?
Tanlick,
yes. And Kevin Claremont, who is seated there, as well as Mary Beth Grant, the Judicial Administrator. We have two representatives from News Service. We have Dan Aloy from the Cornell News Service Chronicle. And
Emily Cohen from The Sun.
Then along with that, we have Peggy Beach, who's in the Office of Assemblies, Ari Epstein, Amy O'Donnell, and, I'm sorry, who is our assistant to it. Okay. Great. So, we have two batches of minutes that were sent late in the, sent a couple of days ago. And they're both available for you, the September 26th, October 24th. How many folks have glanced at these? Yes? No. Yes? No. Yes? No. Oh, yes. Okay. There's been a number of people who have, so I think it's worth those who haven't just doing a quick scan of them. From those who have, are there any comments or additions? I've looked through them as well. None? Okay. Well, then we'll wait two minutes for you just to look at the two of them, because it appears that they'll all be good to go. Okay. Okay. There's a recommendation that spell check be used on them. Typo.
We do a button.
Okay, just another one. But I noticed there's only one. There's one.
Where is it?
Later. Oh.
Which button?
Wednesday, September 26th, and it's late editions in the fourth paragraph from the bottom.
First page?
Last page, sorry.
What?
Last page, hit four.
Last page. Oh, liaisons, right. Okay, Randy Wayne asked what would be the most efficient way to ensure that the other assembly's liaisons to the various committees report back. See it?
No, it's supposed to be late additions.
Late additions, but it's
he is on and it's
alighted.
Next paragraph,
yes, the
one
here. Oh, yes. Oh, isn't liaisons and stuff? Maybe.
No, I just leave some.
All right, I'm terrible at spelling things. All right, late additions, got it, okay. So do we have a motion to approve the September 26th meeting's minutes? Rodney, second. Great. All in favor? Everyone, anyone opposed? Fine. Do I have a motion to approve the 24th October minutes? Bill. Second. Yes. Alex, was that? No. Steve. Okay, thanks. And all in favor? Opposed? None. Okay. Minutes approved. Next, call for any late additions. Anyone who wants to add something after this? Okay. Yes.
Announcement
from
the committee is coming to work January 30th meeting.
January 30th, we'll have Provost Martin to discuss. Have we an agenda of discussion for her? I think what we can do is on December 5th meeting, should we not have to have the November 28th meeting, we'll set aside time in December 5th in the agenda to come up with a kind of approach to that around the question of planning, campus planning. That makes sense to everybody? Please feel free to say things, everybody. I'm happy not to be the only one. Okay. Any other? Oh, yes. And there may be also at that December 5th meeting, once again, should we not have one on the 28th, a representative from the campus store to discuss that part of our responsibility. How we can intersect better with the campus store. Onwards to the committee reports, the Codes and Judicial Committee. And I've introduced the representatives who are here. We have with us a copy of the Campus Code of Conduct as well as a letter of transmission. We had these more than a week in advance. I want to ask, I hope everybody has acquainted themselves at least with the letter of transmission. If you want to do a quick cram, please read that. So we'll allow 1 minute for that. Just to read over the two-page letter transmission from the CJC, please, to reacquaint yourselves with it. Okay, as the liaison from the University Assembly to the Codes and Judicial Committee, I just want to say briefly that the effort on this was quite extraordinary for a campus, any campus administrative body of which I've been a part through the 30 years I've been here. And this was extraordinary in several ways. One is the level of participation of diverse representatives of diverse elements from the campus, diverse constituencies. The amount of time that was spent in reading over and serious consideration of all of the aspects. The amount of time that was spent in reading over community comment through the year period that this has been going on, and responding to it in both discussion and developing of the document, and the committee, I would say, performed in what one has to say is an ideal way. As a campus body, a campus committee, for the assembly, and it's so I commend to you the committee's work, and I commend to you the document. So I hope today that we'll be able to to look at it, address any kind of questions that you brought to the meeting about the document as it stands, and craft a resolution thereafter that reflects our response to the document that we can pass today. So with that in mind, I want to turn the matter over to, first of all, the committee members. Is there, I think we set aside certain people to do certain roles. Is that right? And how do you folks want to proceed in discussing it? Rachel, did you want to say something first?
Sure, I can go first. Hi, everyone. My name is Rachel Markman-Tanlick, and I'm an undergraduate on the committee. I'm a delegate from the student assembly, and I've been on the committee for one semester. In terms of our process, I'll just echoing what Marty said, our process for revamping the code, I found to be extremely democratic. Everyone's opinions were always heard and respected. And kind of my role as undergraduate, I'm going to talk about the major things that I thought of. Be concerned. One of my main concerns was off-campus jurisdiction. Personally, I believe this code should include off-campus jurisdiction, but I was really worried initially that it would be taken too far. And we've extensively debated the issue, and I'm very satisfied with our decision to include off-campus jurisdiction, but only in cases in which serious violations occur. And I think the wording is that pose a substantial threat to the university's educational mission or property or to health and or safety of university community members. We also had a lot of questions in our forum as to what is defined as serious from students, and I think we have largely answered those questions, although we intentionally left serious kind of undefined. Secondly, as an undergraduate woman, I was really concerned about, I know also all that crimes such as date rapes are very underreported on this campus, so I was really concerned over whether or not we were going to include the federal rules of evidence in the code, and our entire committee really struggled to, we're looking for a balance that would achieve our goal of making the process of reporting such a crime easier on the complainant who may feel uncomfortable testifying in front of a hearing panel, while also allowing for the accused right to confront their accuser. I personally believe that we have achieved our goal and found a really great compromise between the rights of each. It's been a very enlightening semester, and I'm very pleased with the work that's made.
Terrific. I think we'll make some continue some presentations and then have general questions for the committee. Who was going to go? Was Andy? Were
I
you?
Think so.
Okay. This is Andy Cowan, who's a grad.
I'm Andy Cowan. I'm a second year law student and GPSA appointee to the committee. I can happily echo most of what's already been said. I think it was a great process. We had a lot of great fun arguments about things. This code that we have presented to you represents balance and compromise, which is really what it has to be about, because any time that this code is invoked, there are people with different interests in the system. There is a complainant, somebody who feels they've been wronged, an accused, somebody who may feel they've been wronged if the process doesn't go their way, and whose status as a member of this community may be in danger. And then, of course, there's also interests of the entire community, whatever we may think that those are. And we've spent a lot of time trying to decide how to balance those interests, and this code that we're presenting to you represents our best attempt at it. As we wrote in our draft letter to you, you know, it's not a final document. As you all know, this is an ongoing process. And there are some things in here that that we hope will work the way that we want them to, and but things that are new, you never know until they get put into practice exactly how they will work. And so we are, of course, here and ready to make amendments in the future if that's necessary. I guess my message to all of you is I've had a lot of fun working on this, and I hope that all of you have had a chance to read it over, and I hope that all of you will read it over and give some thought to what we've done with it, and you know, come to your own decision as to whether this is correct balance and compromise, and also to sort of engage us in discussion about why we did things the way that we did them, what our discussions were, how we came to the conclusions that we came to, and then make your own independent decision. I think in terms of our goals here, we were primarily trying to make this a structural revision, so that the code would be more digestible and easier to understand. There's still a lot of legal language in it that will probably never change, and we hope that the administration will do its part in helping to educate students about what this all means. There are also some changes in the content of the code. Rachel mentioned the issue of off-campus jurisdiction. That's a big one that I hope you all have thought about and will continue to think about. We have strengthened the language protecting the accused student's right to counsel. We have largely kept all of the student's procedural protections intact. By student, I mean the accused, which is, of course, not necessarily a student, but that's the way that we sort of tend to conceptualize it. And then the other, I think, change that we haggled a lot about, and I'm not going to find a page number for you while I'm talking, but it's the part that talks about the accused right to confront their accuser, which is what Rachel was referring to with Federal Rules of Evidence, and trying to find a fair balance between the right of the accused to hear the evidence against them and respond cogently to that evidence, versus the right of somebody who has had serious emotional and perhaps also physical harm done to them, who may have a very strong interest in not confronting that person. And we've tried to find a fair balance of that by presenting a policy. Page 25, says Rachel. 27. The compromise that we came to was 6C, bottom of the page, the big paragraph. Compromise that we came to was to say that ordinarily you have the right to confront your accuser, but that in, what was the language that we settled on, in compelling cases where the hearing panel decides that the complainant's interest in not testifying outweigh the accused interest in confronting the accuser, that in that case, which we hope will be an exceptional and an unusual case, that the hearing board may decide to admit a written statement or somebody else's account of what the complainant said rather than bringing in the complainant to testify live. So I think those are the major changes. Like I said, what's that? I will leave it at that. The off-campus jurisdiction is, I just had it, I think it's on 16? Yeah, it's on 16 under Article 1. Third paragraph, this title shall also apply to conduct elsewhere. Yeah.
Do we want to have, Kevin, did you want to say something? No. James, did you? No. Fine. David?
No, let me just reflect that a year ago, we've come a long ways in that year. I think a year ago, if the Krauss report recommendation that the UA not be in charge of the campus code had been put forward, we wouldn't have even been having this discussion. So I think there's been a lot of ground covered with full community involvement over that year, and I think this is a fitting culmination of it. The issues of we had a discussion about a couple of them we mentioned also on privacy issue, having to do with videotaping and such like activities, which we worked rather hard on for our last meeting, and I hope that we're sooner. So it's been a long year, but here we are.
Actually, I'll take you back on that.
All right.
Yeah.
And Dan, you're right.
And I also want to emphasize that around the table at these meetings, I was there on my behalf as the Judicial Code Counselor, We had people from my office, people from the judicial minister's office, the police, and so, these are all either ex officio or voting members of the committee, but it just illustrates that people whose, whose daily, basically their livelihood is spent, living and dying by this code, all came to a compromise on it. So I think that it is part of knowing how we came to this, is understanding that all these different parties who are very, very concerned with this came to an agreement.
Okay, fine. I think we could open up to questions from the University Assembly, and we can, I guess, start with let's have short questions, but and reasonably short answers, so we can go around, and then we can see whether there are we'll need to lengthen the questioning time and the response time. Who'd like to go first? Did you have your hand up, Elizabeth? Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, Randy.
So I think it's a great guy, and so I really want to ask you a little bit. What was the balance of compromise involved in coming to the end? I had suggested on your website that maybe crimes like rape, sexual assault, or sexual abuse could have a statute of limitations of 2 years instead of 1 year, because sometimes it takes quite a while to realize such a crime has been committed. But I'm wondering how you decided that fraud could go longer than 1 year, but rape would only have a statute of limitations of 1 year.
Does Kevin, you want to answer that, or? One thing we have to say about the code that hasn't been said, and that is that, but it's said in the letter, that is, the working basis for development of this code was the one that was in operation for the past 15 years. And that is amended and changed as time passes by the Codes and Judicial Committee through the UA amending process and trustees process. So there may be things that are in the present code, in fact, one imagines there are, which will be subject to amending. This was the process, as described here, of streamlining to a certain extent, getting certain areas flexed and opened out a bit. So there may be things like extending the statute of limitations that can be amended, or can go through the process of amending in subsequent semesters. As is said, this is not a document written in stone. In fact, it's designed through this committee system to be amended and developed. So
that is true. The substantive changes we tried to make were ones that were forced by the process of restructuring, reordering. We weren't engaged in sort of changing independent substantive points. But on the limitations point, I mean, it is a year. The fraud provision is simply to provide for the fact that you may not know about the fraud at all. There's a slight extension there. But in general, the period can be extended by the judicial administrator. And so we thought that was sufficient to deal with all the variety.
But to more directly answer your question, Randy, I don't think we formally decided that at all. It wasn't really on our docket for this semester, and it's something that we can take up in the future.
This is it.
Been made aware by human students of cases of rape, all of which were horribly, horribly traumatizing. And I think that, I mean, I know one case that it really did take a year for the student to be able to sort of pull herself together. She had to leave campus for a while. She had to go home. she had horrible health repercussions from the rape, and just, you know, gradually understanding the extent of damage to her person caused by this action. And you know, maybe she, I think she was at the point that she realized she should have made a whole complaint that had the originally. I can see where in cases like this it would take longer to get yourself to the point to raise the charge, because you've got to deal with everything that's going to happen to you as a result of the abuse, and you know, the charges and sort of further emotional assault that is coming on. So it is something to think about. But I, reading the introduction you gave out, on the second page, where it says that those cases, the first attempt to listen here is to say that are deemed serious by the court and the code. That made me pause a little bit. Now, receiving the section of the code that deals with that, it sounds like a large amount of discretion to hand to those officials. I'm just asking you, serious, and who decides whether it's serious or not, and how they can treat it.
Kevin.
Yes. The current scheme, under the current scheme, the president can go after grave misconduct completely outside this judicial system and with none of the protections of this judicial system. Well, there are a couple of problems. One, grave misconduct. I mean, what are we talking about? Their insurrection or something like that? Maybe not sexual abuse or something. But there was a concern that perhaps we ought to have further reach to off-campus offenses, but also reach which does carry over some of the protections, in other words, that normal judicial process should extend. So then the question becomes, okay, what kind of cases? Well, you could attempt a substantive definition of which kind of cases you want to go after, but it turns out that any definition of that nature will fail. And so consequently, what we decided was a procedural situation, solution, that we would set up a procedure whereby the judicial administrator could pick those cases which are serious in a certain sense, a sense of a substantial threat to the university's education, institutional property, or to the health or safety of community members, up on page 16. Well, obviously, that generates the concern. Well, what about a judicial administrator gone crazy? What do we do there? Well, we don't want the judicial administrator to make those decisions all by himself or herself. So we require the judicial administration to get the approval of the president, so that we obviously that will constrain the judicial administrator and make the judicial administrator behave. But what about the judicial administrator and the president in cahoots? Well, that we tried to handle on page 28. And this is an important provision, 9A, which makes this off-campus jurisdiction a defense, 9A. That is to say that the defendant can raise this point and say, well, this isn't serious. I mean, you kind of defined serious, but the judicial administrator and the president were abusing that power. Well, the accused can raise that point, and that is a defense, and the hearing board ultimately will decide whether or not this fits that language. So a further procedural check. So that was the solution. An effort to extend jurisdiction and protection off campus, but not to run hog wild. We decided to do that through procedure. And the procedure is that the judicial administrator must get the approval of the president, and then ultimately must convince the hearing panel that nothing has gone awry and nobody's abused in power.
Thanks. David?
Yeah, could you address the change from grave to serious?
The grave misconduct is a wholly separate thing, and it still exists. The president retains that power. That's on page... four, that the president originally retained this power to be able to just override the current system. In fact, it's under a section for overriding, presidential override. And so that is for the extraordinary case that it's sort of a Rambo situation of riots, etc.
That's step A.
Yeah, it's the B part. The B part still exists. This is from the old code. But it's seldom used, and as I say, being seldom used can be abused, that there are no protections. So what we tried to do is regularize this with this parallel serious conduct provision. So what's the relationship with serious is obviously somewhat less serious than grave misconduct, but it's a parallel provision. Both still exist.
Mary Beth, do you want to say anything about that?
Kevin said exactly what I was going to say. The only thing I would add is that because now all of the protections of the code apply to the serious misconduct, it also allows complainants to appeal. So if the JA and the president together don't think it's serious and dismiss the case, then the complainant can say, sure felt serious to me, and have that reviewed by a hearing board as well. So it's adding protections on both sides.
In case some of you didn't know, that was Mary Beth Grant, the judicial administrator of the university. Any questions further? Yes. I'm sorry. Dave, thanks. Could you speak up?
Do you have an example of a specific infraction that would now be covered in the off-campus part
There've been a couple of cases where the president has chosen to use that sexually grave misconduct case, sexually grave misconduct provision of the code, and it tended to be the two that come to mind immediately are a fight with a weapon and an injury. So maybe there was a case a couple of years ago where there was a student who was harassed the day before his MCAT. Some people who we thought that if he had turned them in for hazing came and kept him awake all night, basically, in college town. There's no injury. There's obviously a really bad thing, but it's not drive to the level of being exceptionally grave. Now it would fit under probably the serious thing. So that's there have been hazing cases that were not necessarily exceptionally grave that might fit under this. There have been, I'm thinking of real life examples. I remember that there was an assault, a Cornell student beat up another college student, no injury ultimately. But that might be a case where it would be considered serious, but not necessarily exceptionally grave. Right. And when you say step in, it's not that we're out looking for it, but somebody calls it to our attention.
Anybody want to add? Yes.
Another thing that I think people commonly get confused about when we talk about this off-campus jurisdiction is that it's important to realize this has nothing to do with the Cornell police patrolling College Town or anything else to do with what the Cornell police do. This is not about police jurisdiction, it's about code jurisdiction. It's about what the police do is fixed by law and by their agreements with the Tompkins County Sheriff and other law enforcement agencies. And the way that this operates sort of in practice is, okay, some sort of hazing thing happens in College Town or wherever, and then, you know, maybe somebody calls the police and there's something separately going on in the criminal courts, but then somebody also goes to Mary Beth and says, you know, this thing happened to me and can Cornell do anything about it? And then she could initiate the process under the Campus Code of Conduct.
Tamara. Is it fair to say the guarantee of no dual prosecution or no dual adjudication going on carries over to off-campus jurisdiction? That is, if a person is charged with a violation off-campus, if a person commits if there is a case raised off-campus and it's being handled in the city courts, or to county court, that what is the status of that violation with regard to the campus code?
So there are often cases that are resolved both in the criminal justice system as well as in the campus disciplinary process. We have different goals. So one way to think about it is that the criminal justice system can't suspend someone, but we can't put somebody in jail. So for example, in a rape case, there are different goals by each system, so we would want each system to deal with it.
Yeah, I was just asking about off-campus, just so that people would know that specifically, because indeed they are pursued, both of them, but the guarantee is that the civil court action will take precedence and the campus action will wait for the resolution of the civil court one, yes?
No. So first of all, you use the word guarantee, and there's a balance in Title I that exists now. And
page 2.
Yes, and exists in the new code that states a preference for waiting for, and you use civil, but I think you mean criminal.
Criminal,
for
yeah.
The criminal matter, but it depends on a lot of factors, including how serious the matter is. It's more likely that the case will go forward in a campus disciplinary system if it's a felony, for example. So there's a balance that's provided in Title I, and that's already in the current Title I.
I guess, what's the extent...
No, that's right. That's good. We'll get around.
What's the extent of the purview to off-campus? I mean, if a student is at home and, you know, gets a UI, is that something you guys are looking into, or even if you go to the college town and try and
know is that already we get cases from all over the world. I've had cases from Rome, I've had a few students from home from Australia, because there's already a provision in the current code that says there's jurisdiction when there's property being used for educational purposes. And if you think about Cornell in particularly, with the increasing worldwide focus, we've got jurisdiction already all over.
That, is that for a study abroad program? So I'm thinking of three.
Yep. So this could include something like that. In fact, we used to jokingly refer to the joke about break and sign up, but we used to refer to that section as the when you go home for break and you tell your mother something should happen. So particularly tricking your mother. But what I would anticipate is that we're not going to be scanning the news reports from every place where our students are, spring break, and things like that. If something comes to our attention, then we would look into it. And certainly there is going to be some logistical issues with different police partners. You know, we have a great relationship with our Cornell police and a relationship that can be improved with the Ithaca police, but how would I get the records from Daytona Beach? You know, there's some issues with proving.
Yeah, I think that this provision is aimed at the situation where you say, gosh, Cornell ought to be able to do something about this. And then the procedural protections are there to make sure that it's not abused to get open container violations while you're home on the bus. Or the college campus.
Yeah.
The framers intended to deal with the situation directly for the university or the college campus.
Dan.
Rachel,
yeah. Oh, yeah, let us in.
As a student, the way I view it is this is directed more towards someone has been committing violent acts in College Town, not someone got caught with an open container. You know, that's not the concern in any way. It's something that's really posing a serious threat to other community members.
And my conception of it has sort of been, which I think plays out the same way in practice, that one way to think about it is if whatever the act of misconduct is has ripple effects that come back to Cornell, then Cornell ought to be able to do something about it.
I think the difficult thing about that, though, is at least in my experience, you could argue, you know, oh, Cornell students get, you know, DUI from the front page of a newspaper somewhere. Like, that's bringing a negative impact back to Cornell in some way. So, I mean, you can obviously draw tangents from a lot of different ways and, you know, find some connection.
I think we need to continue this thread, but I also think we need other opinions, and then we'll come back to it. I think we'll circle around it more, I think. Yes, Dan. Yes, we established early on in the committee that the fact that the administration is part of the faculty and staff. Yeah.
The other question I had was I didn't understand if the report that was here
the fourth thing is New York state statute requires that Title IV, and it's the under the president and the trustee has to approve that. So I mean that's required by statute. A separate procedure for the president to step in and supersede the JA to maintain public order.
Okay, a lot of these public order things are the same thing.
Yes,
the JA is doing.
Right.
So I don't understand.
We're forced by statute to have that separate. And the basic effect of that separateness is that the UA has ability to adopt and amend Titles 1, 2, and 3. The trustees have control of Title 4. And that's why they have to be kept separate.
But just one point about the other one. Unless the president can just start to meet, in this case, his obligation by going to meet.
And just to let you know, we really tried to combine them as much as we could, but as Kevin said, because of the way the law is structured.
I
question or observation when you're here longer. And that is, I'm reading through this. There's a lot of language about that the hearing board or the agency here in charge of assault, you know, rape, these sorts of things, these are felons. These are very, very serious things. I would think that the campus police, as deputy sheriffs in the county, would take the complaints and the evidence and go downtown to the DA and point out what he wants. I mean, these are serious crimes. And I just can't see, you know, a campus group to do it. I mean, for several reasons. One is I don't know that we're equipped to prosecute or protect either accuser or defendant in the way that the courts are. And I'd be afraid that we would interfere with the court's communication. We decided to suspend somebody because we all thought maybe they did it, that would prejudice that case downtown. And, you know, you could have somebody who was really guilty get off because, you know, you go to court and say, you know, my case is compromised by court on action.
So, Mary Beth is obvious.
That's a concern.
And Mary Beth's an obvious person to answer this. Yeah.
So that's the point that I was making earlier, that there are two different systems with two different goals. So the kinds of serious cases that you're describing, we wouldn't necessarily want that person to remain a member of the Cornell community, not living up to the standards and, you know, creating a risk to other community members. But at the same time, there should be criminal ramifications too.
So you would wait for them to be convicted before you started the GAA?
We try really hard to balance those things. So, for example, there's a provision that allows an emergency temporary suspension prior to adjudication of the merits. That's a provision that's often used, not often, it's like once a year, maybe twice a year, but in really bad cases, so that we don't run into the situation where we're having evidence that is sort of discovery so that doesn't impact the criminal matter. We try and work with the criminal justice system to make sure that we're achieving exactly the balances that you're expressing concern about.
So it would seem that it might be more useful if this group worked like that, the town justice system, which is, whoa, just make that and talk to the court and just, you know, back up until it was adjudicated. That, I mean, if it's a serious crime, they're going to put them in jail.
So,
and if they feel that there's any chance they're going to run away or re-offend, they're going to keep them in jail without bail. So,
short
of that, what's the point of that? I'm just concerned about both the accused and the accuser in these cases. And I think this is a great opportunity over at Llewellyn. But fundamentally, there's a conflict there between making sure that justice gets done. And so I would think that for things that were serious and grave or misdemeanor felony crime type thing, that the judicial system here would wait until the courts are handled and dealt with it. The other concern I have is that historically, and a lot of this is not well documented, but judicial procedures administered by deans or presidents or judicial have also shielded people from the full consequences of their acts. There are more than one young fellows who became older fellows who committed what would have been crimes on the outside. But because there was an internal taking care of their community, they never faced the consequences. Some went on to reoffend, some went on to the government, some, you know, whatever. But I think you've gone way towards defending that. But that's also another concern. If somebody would use the Cornell hearing of a serious or grave thing as a substitute for the outside jurisdiction. I don't think anything wrong with what you've done. I think what I'm saying is it's a difficult problem to solve. And I would think that you could have the same document or somewhere in there and say, okay, for serious things, for misdemeanors, felonies, things are actually crime, that the judicial procedures need to start until then. The court finishes the court.
Let me just say, I believe the document does say that, in the sense that but it also has to balance the question of serious crimes, felonies that might take place, and Cornell saying we're not doing a thing about that. It has no impact on the campus at all. Now, there may be a problem of compromising evidence and so forth that I think Mary Beth just addressed, but she addressed it by saying that one has to work out cooperative relationships on prosecution so that things like that don't happen. On the other hand, if there are serious offenses, on campus or off, that are worth, need to be prosecuted, to say that Cornell shouldn't do a thing about them in its campus judicial system, protect the victim, let's say. Wait a minute. So let's leave it at that. There are other people who want to say things. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say if you want to see where this is addressed in the code, it's on page 2, and in two different places it says that the JA should consider withholding the exercise of university jurisdiction until public officials have disposed of the case by conviction or otherwise. So there is an effort in this document to prevent that sort of conflict between the two systems. In terms of your concern about somebody using the code as a shield to avoid, you know, getting a criminal record, well, if that's your concern, you should take it up with the DA next time she runs for re-election, because that's not something that we have any control over. They're completely separate systems, except that, of course, the JA can go talk to the DA and can say, you know, I think that, you know, in this possession of marijuana case, maybe we should just resolve this on campus, or, you know, I think that in this rape case, you know, we're going to temporarily suspend the student, let the criminal courts do their work, and then see what we need to do on campus. So they can talk to each other, but they're separate systems.
Anybody else from the committee want to say something about that? Dan, does that speak to what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
yeah. Tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it's 6 days or something like that that they have until the criminal matter is resolved. I mean, if the person or the person involved will have 6 days of the time to resolve the court, then bring it back if they want to address it here as well. Right. So.
Now, we're getting on to, I believe it's 5:30. We have till 6 o'clock in our regular meeting time. Isn't that right? And I think we want to take 5 more minutes for discussion and questions, and then we have to work on making a decision and a resolution, should it be our will. Yes, David.
I'm just puzzled and concerned by the breadth of the reputational interests of the university itself. Page 1, and that term is not defined. Reputation is the actual nitty-gritty, but it seems to me that there is a number up there that's being used. For example, in the drug abuse case, I think your answer was that there's within the breadth of the educational mission of the university that was violated. That gives me pause, and it seems to me that it might be your example of Chris, of student found driving without a license or whatever in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, Cornell student somewhere, that this would not be a case of but what this idea of the reputational interest could sort of creep into the way that things are judged seriously.
I don't really know. I haven't thought that through. So, but just to take what you're saying that you would prefer that not to creep in, that it's just not just reputation, that it's something more.
Something more
correction. Yeah, that's a fair comment. And that's all I'm suggesting.
Alex.
I've got a really simple question that should be resolved frequently, but with regards to suspension, like we were talking before, if it turned out that you were wrongly suspended, is there any provision for that not going on as a disciplinary record?
Well, any case cited by the hearing board can be appealed to the review board. So there's a process.
No, she's talking about the record of the student. How does it get expunged from the record? Wrongful suspension. Isn't that what you had in mind?
Yeah. Like, what if they're summarily suspended pending disposition and then found not a violation?
A temporary suspension pending a hearing on the merits does not go on a record. That's not a finding on the merits. So, this document is substantially the same procedurally as our current document, and there's a ton of checks and balances in this. So, if somebody goes through a hearing process and is suspended, that doesn't have to be the final word. A review board can review that to make sure there are no procedural errors and to make sure that there's not a wrongful suspension.
Mm-hmm. And, yes, Elizabeth? I guess I want to rule here that that question really speaks not so much to what the code is, but to questions of how are prosecutions developed in the police department and other places. And I think it's a useful discussion, but I don't know that that any amendations or changes to the code could. And I also want to rule that way because we've had our 5 minutes, and I think we've raised some important issues, but I don't know that. Well, this is a preamble to trying to get to the resolution. I don't know that we need to that we've come up with any kind of substantive criticisms of the code that need to be discussed in terms of amending what's in front of us. We may, as we craft a resolution, come up with problems, but I think we can move to a discussion of a resolution. Does that seem fair? Yes, Rand.
I have one short question while everybody's here that I'd like to ask. And that's, this time last year, there was a certain amount of distrust between the UA and DAO about how to work on the code. And the president was going to appoint some people. And I'm just wondering how everything works. I mean, the outcome is terrific. So how did everything work between your committee and the administration to come up with this
Kevin, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we managed to beat off the idea of a committee that would be in parallel with the Coastal District Committee. And so we were able to operate on our own without the administration committee. And we worked over the summer, which also increased the interest of others in the process. Susan Murphy did sit in on and did contribute during the summer. But other than that, the administration...
As did Mary Opperman.
As did Mary Opperman, that's right.
Right.
But other than that, the administration had hands off. As a result, we don't know how this is going to be received.
But we did have participation in the first couple of meetings of people from Mary Opperman's office beyond Mary Opperman. For example, the person that was responsible for the development of policies and procedures and ratification thereof in the Human Resources office, because there was a section of Krauss' report that talked about that office being in charge of the code. And we had representatives from the Dean of Students office come and talk, including Dean Hubbell. Charlie Walcott, the Dean of Faculty, came in to at least four meetings that I remember and stayed for them and contributed as well. Susan Murphy was an active participant both as a member of, in committee meetings and in emails. The kinds of comments that we had at the end of our deliberations from the administration were, I think, dealt with satisfactorily at our last meeting. One of the members of the administration raised the question, was it simple enough, the code? And I think that member of the administration attended the meeting and I think was satisfied that you can't, you know, get a Ten Commandments kind of format for the code. That it has to have the kinds of checks and balances that were crafted into it, both in the original code and also in its amended version. So we'll see what happens, but as a part of our discussion of this resolution, we want to decide how strongly we want to recommend it and things of that sort.
And Dave? There is some grave recommendations.
Yeah, there is some grave.
I think even with the general people there, they were not treated in any special way in terms of their opinions.
Oh no, they were treated as members of the Cornell community. Right.
And you know, you could have a Ten Commandments type of thing. University of Virginia Law School has one that says, "Don't lie, cheat, or steal. If you do, we'll expel you." And that's the end of their code of conduct. But you know, that's not how I think any of us wanted to do it. You know, we had our meetings in Day Hall. They didn't turn out the fire hoses on us. We didn't bomb the building. So I think we're getting along okay.
We were at the
base. So I want to thank those members of the committee that came very much. You're welcome to stay for the rest of this. And to the rest of the to the UA members, and now I think I want to make sure everybody signed in who's a UA member, right? Because we're taking the roll call as our attendance. We're taking the sign-in sheet as our attendance sheet. So I want to ask if folks have any ideas about how to present this to the president. I've started to draft something, but anybody have ideas that they want to contribute about? Well, let me propose what I had in mind. I think we need to send a letter of conveyance, just the way the CJC did to us. And I don't know why we couldn't use mostly the letter of conveyance that the CJC gave to us, and just change things slightly to make it our document conveying the code to the president. And then I think we need a resolution that goes along with it of some sort of support, entirely or however we want to craft it. So that's what I propose. Are there any other thoughts about that? None. So then we have to get to crafting the resolution.
Which I think it's good. I would like something. I looked at again closely enough, but I'd like something in the letter of conveyance to say that this is subject. It will be as now, but subject to revision as we go along.
Well, in the top paragraph, as always, the committee stands ready to make further changes and revisions as needed in the future. The committee considers the code to be a work in progress. Quoting Roscoe Pound? Okay.
And the mechanism for amending the code is in the code itself.
Right. Any other? And yes?
I know, I'm not a member, but I would, some discussion that we had on the email after this was written was about the date that we would recommend starting it, and I would just ask that it wouldn't start until July 1st, 2008, that we in our office can get ready logistically for it, whether it's staffing or database or anything else.
That could be in our whereases, I suppose. Whereas, be it resolved. As a recommendation.
It would be difficult for our office to get up and going with some of the stuff before that time.
Okay, and.
And that would make sense because we're finishing the academic year at that point, too.
Right, exactly.
And then we can get the new class coming in 2008 up to speed on it.
Go into effect no earlier than, not earlier than, because we can say the earliest would be July 1st, right? 2008. Not earlier than July 1st. That could be a second point of the resolve. I don't think we need to talk about what the president's office needs to do with it. For example, whether it should go to the Board of Trustees or not. They'll decide whether they want to do that, as long as we stipulate that it go into effect not earlier than a particular time. Any thoughts? Any contributions to this?
Well,
yes.
Have you mentioned just once yet again what a community effort is?
January. Okay.
That would be in the which?
As the whereas has come from great communities before.
Right. Now, in that regard, what I had started here was something that just comes right out of the letter. It's just in the form of a resolution. Whereas in his letter of 15 May 2007, President David J. Scorton asked the Cornell University Assembly to undertake a thorough evaluation of the campus code of conduct. And whereas President Scorton asked the UA to report to him on the code by 1st December 2007, and whereas the UA gave the task of reviewing the code to its codes and judicial committee, and then we could go on with that without taking language out of the letter, saying whereas the codes and judicial committee submitted, whereas forums, community forums were held. I mean, I know this should have been done beforehand, but then it's forums and comment was made in the period. Somebody else work on further rear edges, will you? I mean, from September to November, no, to mid-October 2008.
So wouldn't we want to include the input from last year's forums too?
No, we don't need to, because last year's forums, this is just picking up on, because we already had a resolution of support of last year's work that we sent through at the end of last year. So this is this year's work that we're talking about. Any other, whereas community forums and comment was made in the period from September to mid-October 2007.
Can I ask for something like that to repeat the words? Taking in all those diverse opinions, this is a document with the balance and compromise.
Taking in and whereas taking
diverse opinions and
Wait a minute. The CJC crafted a revised version of the code. Yes, that reflects your thing. Be it therefore resolved, or do you think we're going to go any further? What? Okay. An inspirational revised version of the code, or just an inspirational document? Oh, well, we could put that in a new whereas, and whereas the whereas. Whereas the University Assembly considers this document, what? I mean, come on, guys, come up with. I mean, we got inspirational as one word, but then be it therefore resolves will be that that the University Assembly gives its full approval of this document, and you know. Whereas the University Assembly considers this effort an admirable
A model example
of an open, deliberative process involving all members of the community, all
interested
communities. The way things should be done. Forevermore.
Okay, and any more ands? I don't have inspirational in here anyway, anywhere.
Inspirational document.
Well, yeah, but then I say CJC crafted a revised version of the code. I should say an inspirational document. How's that? Instead of revised version of the code.
I vote against inspiration.
Yeah.
Perspirational.
All right. No, well, that's in the next. Whereas. I mean, look, this seems like it's trivial, but it's not. We got to get this so we can do something with this document. So please don't drift away, anybody. Is everybody still here? Terrific. Okay, so whereas taking into consideration the diverse opinions and interests of the campus community, of all sectors of the campus community, or of all sectors, right? The campus community CJC crafted a revised version of the code that reflects balance and compromise, and whereas the UA considers this effort a model example of an open deliberative process involving all members of the Cornell community. Shall we just go from there, or is there anything else people want to say? Should I read what I have thus far?
Yes.
Okay, whereas in his letter of 15th May 2007, President David J. Scorton asked Cornell University Assembly to undertake a thorough evaluation of the campus code of conduct, and whereas President Scorton asked the University Assembly to report to him on the code by 1st December 2007, and whereas the UA gave the task of reviewing code to its Codes and Judicial Committee, and whereas community forums and comment was made in the period from... from September to mid-October of 2007, and whereas taking into consideration diverse opinions and interests of all sectors of the campus community, the CJC crafted a revised version of the code that reflects balance and compromise, and whereas the University Assembly considers this effort a model example of an open, deliberative process involving all members of the Cornell community, and, no, any other ands?
Well, add one more and knowledge.
Wait a minute, where does that go? Oh, okay, diverse opinions, interests, and knowledge.
Yeah. I'm
thinking about a law student.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
We're saying what a great process, but we haven't really said yet that we liked it often, that we liked the result.
We should have had the inspiration.
The inspiration was that.
No, I mean, there was an objection to that, so I didn't put it in, but I can do this again.
I'm going to add inspirational affair document.
Ah, yes. Okay, all sex extensions have crafted an inspirational document. Look, do you want inspirational and fair document that reflects balance and compromise? Is that
yeah,
what you're...
balance, compromise...
Wait a second, hold it. I'm going to put the language in. An inspirational and fair... That reflects balance and compromise, and whereas the UA considers this effort a model example of open deliberative process involving all members of the Cornell community, well, you know, we can be a little bit verbose about it. And
I'd rather not. I don't want to sign a
You don't want to sign a verbose? A verbose look, these two last ones are, whereas taking into consideration diverse opinions, interests, and knowledge of all sectors of the campus community, the CJC crafted an inspirational fair document that reflects balance and compromise, and whereas the UA considers this effort a model example of an open, deliberative process involving all members of the Cornell community. Now, we can put into our therefore be it resolved something like the UA heartily endorses or something like that.
Support.
I like hardly. But in deference to David's objection, you could take that inspirational out and put it in the later clause that this, we consider this an inspirational model. And we do hope it will inspire people positive.
Whereas the UA considers this effort to be an inspirational model.
An inspirational model, an inspirational example
and
of university.
An open deliberative process involving all members of the Cornell community, is that too long? Of university decision making? Involving members of the, involving all.
An inspirational example of university decision making.
An inspirational example of an open deliberative process, what did you say? What was that last one? No, no, I'm changing that whole passage, the knowledge. Oh, no, the knowledge and interest is diverse opinions, interests, and knowledge of all sectors of the campus community. So, yes, you want to change involving all members of the university campus community to something else, right? You just said that. But what was it? Pardon me. I don't have...
I only need to say that stuff about open...
Oh, come on. Wait. I will. Whereas, this is the last whereas, folks, and then we got be it resolved and it's no problem. Whereas the UA considers this effort an inspirational example of an open deliberative process involving blah. Or an inspirational process.
Maybe I'm right. You say an inspirational example of university decision-making.
An inspirational example of university deliberative process. Is that what you said? Decision, is that hyphen making? Yes. Process. Okay. Be it therefore resolved.
Gordon said December 31st, not first.
He did?
Yeah.
What are we doing so early? No, I think it's good, man. I think it's good. I think it's very good we're doing it now. Be it therefore resolved.
I have another in the weird ass.
Just a minute. Okay, yes.
There's balance and compromise concerning the rights and responsibilities of every member of the community.
All right, let's think about that. I'll read the clause. The CJC crafted an inspirational and fair document that reflects balance and compromise concerning what?
Regarding the rights and responsibilities of the members of the community.
I'm working on that. Just a minute. I forgot that. Regarding the rights and responsibilities of what?
Members of the Cornell community.
Of just the Cornell community. Okay, just a minute. Crafted a fair, how about that? Just a fair document, isn't that right? Well, it's more than fair. It's excellent. What do we want to say, though? Oh, well, then we just leave out inspirational and fair and just put a document. Crafted a document that reflects balance, yes? So, help me out here, guys. Just a simple word here.
An adjective.
Okay, the CJC, this is the last clause of this whereas. The CJC crafted a document, blah, blah, document that reflects balance and compromise regarding the rights and responsibilities of the Cornell community.
Improving document. Okay.
An improved document?
Exemplary.
Exemplary, thank you. exemplary document that reflects. And whereas the UA considers this happens to be an inspirational example of the university decision-making process, be it therefore resolved, yes, and how are we resolving? Okay, that the UA, what did you just do?
Can they make it unanimous?
Huh? Well, we have to move it, and then we have to put our hands up. That's the next step.
Yes, Sam.
In terms of, can we say endorse or enact, or do we have jurisdiction over this?
We have to submit it, though, don't we, to him for his
approval? That the University Assembly, wait a minute, UA.
I'm just wondering what it is that we're doing. Are we endorsing an act? I mean, do we have oversight over
the... Yes, we do have oversight over the code.
And legislative, according to the bylaws,
legislative authority over the code. But what we do is... Enthusiastically approved.
Approved is better because of the Title IV problem.
Yeah.
The and will we remove proposed from the campus code of conduct the heading when we convey this? The first page says proposed campus code of conduct. Should we say the Campus Code of Conduct Draft 103007, or should we say the Campus Code of Conduct?
It's still proposed because of Title IV.
The Campus Code.
The proposed revision.
The proposed revision of the Campus Code of Conduct. Enthusiastically approves the revised campus code of conduct attached to this hereby conveyed to or attached to this resolution. How's that? Does that make sense? Therefore, be it resolved that the University Assembly enthusiastically approves the revised campus code of conduct attached to this resolution, and urges that it be adopted by the and urges that it
be implemented by the
upon approval of the...
I don't need to say this, trustees. No, adopted. I don't think we need to say that. That it be adopted by the... adopted and implemented.
Implemented without being adopted.
Not... Oh, okay. Not earlier.
By July.
By 1st of July, right. By 1 July. To.
By means to take place tomorrow.
How about on?
Okay, good. On, thank you.
Why is it July? Sorry, July.
That's the new academic year. All right, may I read this to everybody? Okay. Whereas, In his letter of 15 May 2007, the President David Skorton asked Cornell University Assembly to undertake thorough evaluation of the code of conduct, and whereas President Skorton asked the University Assembly to report to him on the code by 31st December, and whereas the University Assembly gave the task of reviewing the code to the Judicial Committee, and whereas community forums and comment was made in the period from were held and made, how's that? Were held and forums were held and comment was made in the period from September to mid-October of 2007, and whereas taking into consideration diverse opinions and interests and knowledge of all sectors of the campus community, the CJC crafted an exemplary document that reflects balance and compromise regarding the rights and responsibilities of the Cornell community, and whereas the University Assembly considers this effort an inspirational example of university decision-making process, and therefore be it resolved that the University Assembly enthusiastically approves the revised campus conduct code of conduct attached to this resolution and urges that it be implemented on July 1st, 2008. Retroactively. Okay. Do I have someone to move? I'll move that resolution. How's that? Moved by it. Any second? Elizabeth Sanders. Oh, Tamara. May I accept Tamara's second?
Yes.
All right. All those in favor, may we count? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And Ellis Lowe is 16. Well, but we have three chairs. I'm not supposed to move it either?
But it's okay. That's just tradition, but it's okay.
It's tradition. Tradition. We'll break with tradition, yes.
Okay, may I move that we amend that to include the word unanimous?
Because I think it wasn't. Enthusiastically and unanimously. Approves a revised campus code of conduct attached to this resolution. So the vote is, I'm sorry, 16, right? 16, any opposed? Any abstentions? Great. Congratulations.
15 or 15?
15? I'm sorry, raise once more. We'll get it in the record. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. No? 15? And
Ellis.
And Ellis is 16, and can I be 17, please? I step right in your chair, all right? 17? No. Okay. I'll figure that out. We'll look at the rules. Will folks accept that someone else will craft any differences in this letter of conveyance to just tailor it to our to UA language? Does that make sense to folks? Is everybody clear on what I'm saying? That is that the codes and judicial letter of conveyance to us will be recrafted with just references to it being our letter of conveyance to the President's office. Yes?
Yes.
Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Who was that from? Steve, okay. Any seconds? Yes. All in favor? Hey.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.